Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Ben Hobson.
And me, Kieran Alger.
This week we are joined by Eddie Brocklesby, founder of Silverfit.
I started at about 50. I went up to Nottingham University area, and the half marathon or the marathon was round Nottingham and that sort of an area. I came back from that marathon and said to my husband, I'd love to have a go at the half marathon. And he said you couldn't even run 3 or 4 miles into Northampton. And I think it was that challenge.
It's a pleasure to have you step into the fold, Mr. Alger.
Thank you for having me on.
Especially as the absence of Rick is because he's officially become a father.
Congratulations, Rick.
Exactly. So an extended congratulations to the whole Pearson family for such wonderful news. It's not often that I get you for a non-tech chat.
I know, I feel so honoured. I feel like this is a great occasion for me and for Rick.
And for running.
And for running, yeah.
How's your running? What's been going on?
My running's great. I'm training at the moment for London via Tokyo. So I'm going to do the Tokyo Marathon to get my 6 stars. And then I'm going to try and run a fast marathon in London.
Nice.
But I had a bit of a cold, so I'm doing that thing where the weeks are squashing. It's going to be like a 10-week training program.
Right. It's just about bending time.
Exactly. It works, doesn't it?
Marathon training is just about bending time. It's fine. Yeah.
And completing it is also about bending time. So yeah, hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll be able to beat my PB in London.
Which is sub 3.
Sub 3. I'll need to do 2:57.03. It's quick, isn't it?
It is.
It's quick enough. Scary quick.
Well, you know, now with all the news about carbon plates and what's going to be allowed or not, you know, you're going to have to...
I need some 8%ers.
You're going to fashion some of your own.
Well, you know, they won't know if I've snuck an extra plate in there, will they? I know it's only supposed to be one, but...
True.
I could just carve a couple open.
Yeah, well, why not? You know, I'd like to see how your experiment gets on.
We'll see. We'll test.
All right, perfect. Well, let's get our guest on.
Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete. Could be a physio. Or a complete unknown.
Eddie Brocklesby is an author and the CEO and founder of Silverfit, an organisation set up to encourage lifelong fitness through affordable physical activity and at the same time combat social isolation, improve older people's quality of life and also save the NHS and social care money. She joins us today to explain why you're never too old to become a runner. Welcome, Eddie, to the Runner's World podcast.
Thank you.
You are the UK's most senior Ironman athlete.
I love the word senior. Yes.
Well, I mean, this is old. It. So this is probably maybe one of the main things, maybe one of the obstacles with tackling this whole subject. People refer to the elder generation, old people.
I'm 76 and I'm old.
Right. Got it. You're also an author.
I am. Yes.
Of Iron Gran.
Yeah.
So detailing your journey through your fitness. To go back to the beginning, how did you get into running?
I started at about 50. I went up to Nottingham University area. I'd been at Nottingham with my husband. And the half marathon or the marathon was round Nottingham and that sort of an area. I came back from that marathon and said to my husband, I'd love to have a go at the half marathon. And he said you couldn't even run 3 or 4 miles into Northampton. And I think it was that challenge.
Lay down the gauntlet.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think there's nothing like a challenge from a loved one to really motivate
you. Exactly. Yes.
To go forward. But how did you get into the training then as you approached the half marathon? What did you look
I had 12 weeks. Right. And so with a friend, we sort of followed a slight programme, I think, of steadily increasing it. And I really began to enjoy running out and being in the fresh air and the countryside. And yeah, absolutely loved the training. Wasn't sure that I'd be able to run a full half marathon, but I did.
Were you much of a sort of walker or a hiker beforehand? Was this sort of just, or was this completely new to you?
No, completely new. I'd done no sport really. A tiny bit of squash earlier on and a bit of netball when I was sort of 20-ish, but nothing after that.
Oh, that's a decent gap. So was it intimidating taking that first step?
It was fun. I enjoyed it. Yes, it was a gap, but I wasn't really conscious of that at all. No.
And off the back of this newfound adventure into running, you set up Silverfit.
Oh, that was a long time later.
Right.
But yes, I was the member of a small running club up in Nottinghamshire. And when my husband died, they were just so supportive. You know, you could run with them, you could talk if you wanted to and not if you didn't. So I found that a very valuable experience, far better than sort of the psychotherapy that I signed up for at the same time. And so, yes, I think that's what kept me going. But that small running club had one place in London Marathon, which they gave to me. So I think that's when the serious training started.
It sure does. Yeah. I think we've had a lot of guests on previously who've talked about sort of mental health, wellness from running, people who've suffered bereavement, illness, all those sorts of things. Were you already finding running to be hugely beneficial before your husband died, and then it just sort of snowballed from there?
It was a very small time, only a year or so. So I don't think I had fully appreciated that. But no, I think in terms of the well-being, I agree. It's a great experience, whether you're with a little group or a big club or you're on your own. I think you always feel better after a run.
Yeah, definitely. And so back to Silverfit, how did that come about?
That's quite a long history. I was running an adoption agency. I've been a social worker for nearly 50 years. And we had set up trail marathon runs down the Lee Valley, ending up at what became the Olympic Park. So we actually watched with 5 to go, 4 to go, down to 1 to go and the Olympics. And then sort of stopped, and the group of us that had helped get that run together, the trail run, started to look at where we could make a difference, recognised that it was with our ageing population. And that's the beginning of Silverfit in 2013. And we started in Hyde Park with some Nordic walking, and then moved to, increased to Burgess Park in Southwark, which is probably one of the bigger ones, and now we're in 17 different venues in London.
Wow, that's amazing.
And do you think there's been a change in the attitude to what people believe you can do at any age now? Have you seen that happen in the last kind of 5 years?
I hope so. You know, I think age shouldn't be a barrier. And having fun and making it sociable is absolutely key in my view.
Yeah, I think one of the key pillars of Silverfit is it's about being active. It's not necessarily, I mean, you're a passionate runner, but it's not about getting people running. It's about just being active, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And what we have is a social sandwich, we call it, where people meet up socially. Then they do an hour of physical activity of varying sorts. You know, Bollywood fitness is popular.
Nice.
Silver cheerleading. Yeah. And then socialising again after. And I think that's the key bit. That's what keeps people coming.
Mm. I guess because social isolation is such a sort of important, certainly a big issue for older generations.
Yes, it's a huge issue. And I think anything we can do to make it more sociable and fun for people to come, the more likely they are to keep coming. And that's also valuable in terms of health and an ageing population, is that they stay active, not just a one-month blitz in January.
Which is how everyone does it, yeah.
In terms of sort of overall confidence and socialisation, if you've been isolated for a while, going back out and building up that confidence to get out there. How have you seen that happen in kind of real time with the groups that you...
Oh, many, many times, yes. I mean, we actually keep very good data in Silverfit, and we do a review after a year, and, you know, people will say that it's got them out, it's made new friends, which is vital, isn't it? So that they've met in other circumstances, you know, and gone out together for a nice long walk or even a jog.
So it goes as even extending beyond the organised events
in the group. Oh, absolutely, yes. And, yeah. It's about finding something that people enjoy doing together as an option of. I mean, I can remember meeting friends every Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock, and if you're going for a run in Battersea Park, and if you weren't going to meet them, you probably wouldn't have got out of bed that morning. You know?
Yeah. I think this is it. You talked about being a social worker for your career. Did you ever find that being active was part of the care and help that you were giving then? Did that sort of cross over in the work that you were doing at any point?
I don't think we fully appreciated the benefits of physical activity for ageing until more recently. Now we know the impact on the brain, on the body, and, you know, the recovery from surgery, all of those factors that being physically active at any level, whether you're walking or jogging or actually running, is hugely beneficial.
And do you work with GPs and other kind of health services to, like, for social prescribing, so you're kind of supporting what we're now sort of coming to understand is a really useful thing to treat many different conditions?
Yes, we have. Sport England have actually funded us for wellbeing advisors, which is great. So they would be in a GP practice, able to spend a bit longer with people than the GP's time limit. And, you know, helping them, signposting them to be more physically active. And
I mean, I'm quite fascinated by, you kind of see it, all generations, when you sort of the light bulb comes on, when someone starts to get more active, and there's like a eureka moment that this is more than just me trying to burn calories or get fit. There's another sort of switch. And you must see that all the time now.
Yeah. I mean, the average age in Silverfoot is 68. So seeing that benefit at that age and aging more healthily is so vital. I mean, yeah, the lack of falling over, of course, is one of the big ones that can lead to a dependence rather than independence. And that's another factor.
You guys are making it financially viable for people who don't have an income anymore and who are sort of either living on a pension or, you know, government money or however they're making their money. So because we talk about running being available for all, but at the same time, running shoes cost upwards of so much money. So how do you guys approach sort of making it achievable for others to join in?
We have to get funding externally in order to keep the price as low as possible. On average, it's about £3, which certainly doesn't cover the full costs of a professional instructor in every situation. You know, with people with that average age, that's important.
Have a proudest moment so far?
I think two things. I mean, finishing an Ironman in Vichy was a high point, having failed to do one in Lanzarote the previous. I'd succeeded in Lanzarote Ironman before that, but then failed. And yeah, to actually succeed again was quite important. I think the other thing was getting the British Empire Medal being presented at the Tower of London, with that for my services for healthy ageing. And you think, yeah, I was really proud of that.
Sure. Well, it's a kind of a note that, you know, all the time and effort. Off mic a minute ago, we were talking about your current week and the hours that you have for the charity and for training. Why don't you just break down how that's going for you at the moment?
Well, it's going to change because we're looking at different models for Silverfoot and how we expand. We've clearly got the right recipe. You know, we're run by older people primarily, and I think that's another important factor. So I'm really keen that we do expand further, but the model with which we do that, and that we're looking at whether we become a subsidiary charity or, you know, TSB have very generously given me their community award. So they're going to work with us as well for the next year, which will be fun.
And if I'm sat listening to this, how do I get involved? Where would I find a way to get involved with Silverfoot?
I think if you look on the website, that does list all the venues and all the programmes that we're offering and the different activities in different venues. I think we need to do more about helping people to train, running a few sessions of helping people train to do part run. A part run is brilliant, isn't it? Absolutely fantastic. But I think there's a sort of lack of confidence of people to actually go, even though I know part run are brilliant. You know, you can walk, jog it, can't you? But yeah. I think the confidence of older people to go along needs to be raised. So I think we ought to be doing something more about that.
Do you think that older people feel that that's their environment or naturally? Do you know, do you sort of talk about confidence to arrive, but does it feel like a natural step to turn up to a park run or sign up for a half marathon?
For me, it does. Yes, no. And I mean, I think that's been brilliant about the Big Half. We've got community places in the Big Half that, you know, we've still actually got a few with a quite near deadline to sign up. So I think that's been brilliant to see people Nordic walking the Big Half. It's got a very generous 4-hour cutoff. And I think that's great to see. We had a lot of silver fitters actually doing the Big Half and, you know, never dreamt that they'd be able to do half a marathon.
Right.
It's great.
It is really good. I think on the parkrun side of things, we've had a lot of, I've spoken to a lot of people who've taken their parents along. And I think that's a great way of introducing it. Even Susie Chan, who's a very popular ultra runner, she took her dad along for the first time last year. On the sort of, I think in the prize, like sort of just even demonstrating the thing that she was doing every Saturday, like, this is what I'm doing. This is, come and experience what it is. And just how immediately they, you know, it's not just a one-off. It's, oh, I want to go back.
And it's sociable again, isn't it? You know, my number, many people have got numbers with about 6 or 8 digits. Mine's only 3.
Ah, there we go.
So I do go back to the beginning in Bushy Park, or nearly the beginning.
Yeah, wow. There we go.
Yeah. No, when was the first one? 15 years, 14 years ago?
Yeah, it was a while now. Mm. It's amazing. It's talking about what Kieran mentioned, the social prescribe thing, and how that's, I read a stat about 1,500 GPs have been using it so far as a
brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hugely beneficial, huge impact that it's having.
And it just makes so much sense on so many levels. Like you said, it's not just about getting the muscles moving, but those times when you're arriving, having conversations, being out of the house, feeling like you're part of something, and the motivation, the knock-on effect for the rest of the day and the weekend and the week.
Yep.
All of those things, you know, building, it's part of a foundation, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, Eddie, what's next? What's next for you?
I'm doing the Outlaw 70.3 really as a sort of training thing for the big one, July, is it 5th, 6th, the Ironman in Austria. So,
there we go, wow.
With my coaching program from Annie Emerson, and I'm having to conform.
Annie's great, though.
Yes. Oh, fantastic. She's a brilliant runner herself. And you probably know her target to be 50 and do 250. Oh.
That's incredible.
That is amazing. Good luck with that. I hope the training is going well.
I hope so, too. It's the swimming. It's all about the swimming for me. Yes.
I'm glad to hear that doesn't change.
No, the swim is always seemingly the most sort of difficult bit for everyone, I think.
Yeah.
And it's a fairly generous cut-off time for the once you're actually onto the run and you've made it. Instead of in Maastricht, I was 4 minutes late off the bike, 10 hours and 4 minutes, and they wouldn't let me run.
Oh, that's cruel.
Really cruel.
Eddie, thank you so much for joining us and explaining more about Silverfit, and all the best for the next year.
Thank you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Look. We're talking tech with Kieran Nauga.
Talking tech.
He's an awesome ultra runner.
Talking tech.
Talking tech. He's very charming.
Talking tech.
Knows his polar from his garment.
Talking tech.
So for our sort of monthly dose of everything technologically brilliant, you're here, which is great.
It's tech time. I am still able to put the tech hat on, which is good. Yeah,
it's good.
I feel like I should introduce myself
again,
but again,
in a different persona, a
different voice.
Technology,
I can
Kieran,
be many different people.
All right, good.
Tech people and geek Kieran and non-geek Kieran.
Right, well, actually, there is the one and the same.
They are pretty much. Yeah, there's no difference. I mean, this month, there's one big sort of tech story. You all know about it. It's about those shoes.
Yeah.
And I've looked at this, and you know, it's basically so Brooks have also brought out another carbon plate shoe very recently. And I think I've come across a new angle. I'm normally all for the tech. You know, I support the tech. I think we should be using it to improve ourselves. But I think there's a debate here that's sort of been missing out of the should this be these shoes be allowed to enhance performance or not? And that's about the environment.
Yeah.
And obviously in the current issue of Runner's World, we've been talking a lot about kind of eco issues around running.
Yes.
And one of the things, the Brooks shoes at their announcement said that they would last in their best form for 50 to 100 miles.
Yeah.
That's very, very few miles.
Yes, it is.
For the money, but also, I think, interestingly, for the environment.
Yeah.
The Next Percent and the Vaporflies have a similar sort of level of performance.
Yeah.
So what I've, you know, I wrote a feature recently about eco shoes and trying to change the kind of wastefulness of running shoes and the, you know, petroleum plastics that are going into the shoes that are sort of potentially damaging to the environment. And my argument in this world now is that actually, is it okay for us to be essentially using throwaway shoes like that only last for such a short period of time in order to run a slightly quicker marathon?
Yeah.
And I get, for the elites, if you're Kipchoge and you're going to, you know, there are a few people who are doing this in order to be at one level, but I think as you look at things like the Next Percent and Brooks and Hoka and everyone coming on with these shoes that are slightly less durable, arguably, that mass adoption could be a problem.
One of the major things with it is the carbon plate, because it's so difficult to do anything with carbon fibre.
Yeah, and these
in a recycling sense.
And looking at, you know, I delve right into the sort of different materials that were used for different shoes. And the truth of it is that we're at a point where most of the eco materials that might be more natural, biodegradable, non-plastic based aren't quite as durable, or the performance features aren't quite there yet.
Mm.
So, you know, you've got shoes that are made of more components and there are things in them that don't break down, don't biodegrade. Now, it's something like 300 million pairs of shoes are heading or in the bin every year in the UK alone, and the majority of those go to landfill.
Yeah.
So do we really need to be adding more to that
for
in a shorter
for
space
a PB.
Of time? For a PB. And I think we, you know, it's, I love a PB, Ben, you know that.
Yeah, we all do. Yeah.
But I think you've got to look at it long and hard, I think, now, and think, should I be asking for more from A, the manufacturers, and B, of yourself, to see whether you want to buy those shoes or not.
That's true.
You know, there's a caveat to some of this. You know, they say sort of 50 to 100 miles, and it's not like those shoes fall apart when you reach 100 miles. They do still work. They might not be working optimally.
Yeah.
So there is a caveat to that. And then I think what's really interesting is I came across a bunch of brands who are actually doing something to change the way that we approach shoe manufacture and our shoe usage. So I've sort of picked out three things here. So one really interesting stat is that the end of life, so what happens to your shoes when you sort of throw them away, is only 5% of the overall carbon footprint. And the you know, the main heft of the eco kind of impact comes from manufacturing.
Yeah.
So shoes that last longer are better, right? So that's one thing. So if you can squeeze another 3 months out of your shoes, that's like a 25% drop in the overall footprint, your impact on the planet of having a new pair of shoes. So we make shoes that last longer.
Got it.
I've nailed it.
So is this sort of shoes that last longer than the sort of, you know, the 300 to 500 mile benchmark kind of stuff, right?
Yeah. So all, you know, if all shoes, you'll get a 25% benefit. So even if the Next Percent, you could make them last 3 months longer, you get an extra 25% benefit for the planet.
Yeah.
So one of the brands who's looked at this quite closely are Innovate. And rather than changing the materials that the shoe's made from to be non-petroleum based or more biodegradable, more eco-friendly, they're coating their shoes in graphene so that they last longer. They're 50% more durable than previous outsoles. Obviously, Innovate is a brand that deals very much with sort of trails and kind of rugged, the most demanding kind of area that a shoe would be in.
Mm.
And so that's one innovation that we could look at, which is really good. So the G-Series shoes from Innovate are interesting, I think, from that point of view, trying to make them last longer. The other thing that you can do is cut the number of components in a shoe. So the fewer components, the fewer different materials, the overall the footprint reduces.
Yeah.
And they're easier to break down, easier to recycle, arguably, if you're using the right kind of materials in there. And Vivo Barefoot are looking at that. They've got a shoe called the Primus Light Bio 2 Now, it's a 70% plant-based shoe, so much of the materials used come from plant-based. Corn, natural rubber, algae. But crucially, there's 10% less material overall, so you're using less as well as using different materials.
Yeah.
And then finally, I think, is another way of looking at this, or tackling this problem around shoes, is the Futurecraft Loop 2 from Adidas.
Yeah, this is nice.
And they're shoes that are made from one material, TPU. It's the TPU foam that you get in, that's the Boost foam is made from. Mm. And the whole shoe is made from that material. And then that, because it's one material, can all be ground down and then repurposed to be reborn as a brand new shoe.
Yeah.
The only caveat with that is that you do have to add some virgin plastics into that. Right. So some virgin TPU. So it's not completely old material, and there's some eco footprint that goes with doing that. And I think, you know, the one thing with this, all of this sort of technology is evolving. There's arguments over whether or not you should be we should go to a post-petroleum future where no materials are from plastics or petroleum-based manufacturing. On the flip side, there's lots of arguments to say that all of the natural materials that are created are not necessarily environmentally friendly just because they're natural. The process can be more demanding on the planet.
It's that age-old Prius argument about the battery, right? It's, you know, the car itself and emissions and all that is fine, but to mine the copper or something that's in the battery is super damaging and stuff like that.
Yeah. It's all really complicated.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, going back to the earlier point, the one thing that I think you can do, we can all do, is try and make our shoes last a little bit longer.
Right.
We don't... I've asked around, where does the 300 to 500 mile recommendation come from in terms of when your shoes wear out, the compression of the sole foam, but put them on, do they feel like they're not running as well? Then maybe change them. If not, maybe not.
I can't say any. There's been a huge difference in pulling on a shoe that I definitely know I've run a lot of miles in and being like, oh, these, unless there's a hole in them, but I've never got to that stage. I know some people are super proud of having a shoe with, you know, with their toe poking out the front, and that's the kind of like the benchmark of when a shoe is done.
Yeah.
I guess that if it's not damaging you in any way, then okay, sure.
I think if it doesn't feel really odd and you're not actually really aware of the fact that something's happening, then probably nothing is, you know, and you're going to be fine. So it's just really, for me, from a tech point of view, I'm normally all for new stuff, but I think there's a point at which we now have to flip the...
We have to be responsible.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. That's made us feel better about running and from an environmental point of view.
Yeah,
so you've got anything brand new.
Here's some new stuff that you should buy.
Exactly.
No, I mean, I always like to bring you at least sort of one new thing on here. And I was lucky enough to head over to the Under Armour HQ in Baltimore. And they've got a fantastic... All the big brands have a lab set up where they've got elves in there making brilliant new sort of running innovations. And we had a look around and I came back with two things. I don't normally get excited about fabrics and clothes.
No, it's
but true. I am. I'm excited right now because... There's two fabrics that I saw in this kind of blew my mind, actually, and they're two new products. There's something called the Breeze Tee.
Okay.
Now, sweat wicking claims are 10 a penny, right? There's every bit of clothing says that it gets rid of the sweat faster. But this tee is a collaboration with Gore-Tex. And, you know, those guys are the kings of waterproof, but they've helped create a special type of fibre that's called EPTFE.
Right,
hold on. That's expanded polytetrafluoroethylene.
That sounds environmentally great.
It sounds like it's brilliant for the planet. But what this does, it's super quick drying. And the claim is that this T-shirt can go from saturated, so filthy, sweaty mess, which I'm always in, to dry in 6 minutes.
Wow.
I obviously tested that immediately because I love to test numbers. And it worked. It pretty much worked.
So it's like sodden.
It was sodden from a really hard, a really hard session. I am a really sweaty animal when after I run, so I'm a good test case. And it within 6 minutes, it was
as close, in you just sat down and
close
you,
to dry. I kept it on.
Yeah,
I was in a hotel room and I just waited. I got the clock on and
it's 6 minutes.
In 6 minutes, it was almost dry. I've tested it again subsequently at home on a slightly longer run, and it took a little bit longer, but it is fast.
Have you washed it since?
And it's no, I don't wash it anymore. I just
it's fine because it's, you know, it keeps drying itself.
It doesn't. It still smells. Right. Does it? They haven't got that bit. They fix that bit. But why is that important? I think that, you know, particularly if you do ultras or you're doing runs where you want to come in to an aid station, sit for a bit, you have 10 minutes out, and that's one thing that kills you when your core gets cold with a wet T-shirt. And you don't want to have to keep changing layers. But this, you can sit in after sitting there with your own body heat, it'll be dry and you can go again, leave fresh.
It's even just like post race when you're faffing around, picking up a bag, doing all that sort of stuff. You just get the chill kicks in because you're you're sweaty.
Absolutely. It's so quick, isn't it? And that's one of the worst things about it. There's another thing that they've done, and this is weird magic, and I don't quite understand how it works, but it's a product called the Meridian, and it's a set of leggings and a top. At the moment, it's only for women, which is interesting when I tell you what it does. And this has a peptide in it called antarsin. Mm-hmm. Antarsin, you can find it in some kind of body lotions and creams, and it reacts with the skin to moisturize the skin. I didn't get to try it out, but... You wear clothes and you get softer skin.
Okay.
From this peptide that interacts with the skin, and this is a big claim. But what I think from a tech point of view, what's really fascinating is that this is just the start of mineral-infused fabrics that are going to do more than just keep you warm and dry. You know, they're going to start to do other things. They're looking at whether or not they can, you know, add salts and all sorts of things can come from the fabric itself.
To replenish.
That's one to watch. But dear Under Armour, I'm a man, I like to have soft skin too.
Me too. Who doesn't?
Yeah, exactly. So please can we have them? And they're going to be out later in 2020 apparently, so there's some future tech coming your way.
I think you're right though, the bigger news of that is that things are going to start doing way more than you expect them to do.
Yeah, and in ways that, you know, your gear is going to work harder.
For sure.
But that's good because it will probably cost more. Well, look, we've solved the environmental issue and then added a little bit more back into the mix.
And we've made sure you've got softer skin.
That's all we ever needed, mate.
Tick, tick, tick.
Thank you so much again for educating us all in the future of running.
No, thank you for having me on.
His fingers on the button, his ears to the ground. He's done a bit of Googling and he's had a nose around. He's a detective wearing running shoes.
We're going to talk about carbon plates again, but fear not, it's not about Nike. It's about Brooks, who had a press event last week where they announced the release of three new shoes. One trail shoe, one kind of tempo running fast shoe, and the most exciting of the three was something called the Hyperion Elite. If you are, that's exactly the right noise to make. If you are a fan of fast, racy 5K and track session shoes, this is definitely for you. They already have a shoe in their stable called the Hyperion, which I've tested, as several of us in the office have, and it's very, very fast. This is even faster because it has a carbon plate in it. Our colleague Jane went out to find out about it, and she only ran 400 metres, I think. So, you know, there's a lot more testing to be done, and we've got a whole load of them on the way to the office. What I will say on the basis of the spec that was presented is that it costs £250, and its stated shelf life is 50 to 100 miles.
Yeah, well, we touched upon the environmental impact of carbon plates in shoes, but let's talk about...
Yeah, it's not easy to... It doesn't break down very easily, does it?
Let's talk about this cost per run, because this is...
Yeah. This is... I mean, I kind of mentioned this to the editor-in-chief, Andy Dixon, when I was on my way to the studio, and he said, well, if it's at the lower end of that, which is 50 miles, that's not even two marathons. Yeah. I think it's worth pointing out, you're probably, unless you're an incredibly lightweight, efficient runner, you're not going to run marathons in them. It is a very, very fast race day shoe. And for the most of us, that's going to mean, like, you know, you've trained hard for you to get your 10K PB and you're cracking out your best kit on the day. But I still think that's a lot of money. Sorry, I think I said £250. It's actually $240.
Right.
That's $250 in the US.
Got it.
But that's a lot of money.
I mean, but it's not to sort of to defend Brooks slightly. I mean, it's they're for that portion now of the shoe market. Aside from the Hoka, that's pretty much on point for pound and performance, isn't it?
It is.
Next percent is the same. You know, it's.
It'll be interesting to see if these brands by all bringing out this kind of stuff manage to kind of batter open that door permanently to the higher price point where people just kind of go. Okay, fine. Or whether people go, actually, do you know what? There is a limit and I'm not going to go above X amount of pounds. Yeah. You know, and I think we're still very much in the place where anything that starts with a two causes a wince of discomfort and slight disbelief. But we shall see. Watch this space. I'm going to report back when we've had them on the feet of a few of us for some meaningful mileage, and we'll let you know what we think of them. Next, I want to talk about Parkrun. Which I've kind of got back into recently. I had 6 months out of running or indeed any kind of exercise. So I'm coming back into it gently. So I've had some friends drag me out to my local park run, which is Richmond Park in southwest London. Absolutely beautiful one.
It's a good one.
I've done it the last few weeks. And I was kind of compelled this morning to look up some stats because for the third week in a row, I clocked exactly the same time to the second.
Right.
Except it just felt like a lot harder work.
Right.
And I thought, and you know, there are a couple of like sort of lumps and bumps in the course as there are around Richmond Park. So I looked it up, you know, hoping there would be some kind of excuse for, you know, like actually it's actually quite hilly. Turns out it's not. It's just me. But I did discover some stats about the fastest and the hardest park runs in the UK. So the fastest five or the easiest five, depending on which way you want to look at it, are the Victoria Dock. That's the Victoria Dock in London. That's out and out the quickest one to do. If you're a bit of a parkrun tourist and you're looking to clock them off and you want a PB, head down to the capital. Followed by another London one, Hackney Marshes. And then Worthing in Sussex, Pegwell Bay in Kent, and the Eden Project in Cornwall make it the top five.
Of the easiest slash fastest.
Easiest slash fastest, yeah.
Wow.
If you've been plugging away at Woolacombe Dunes in North Devon and thought, bloody Nora, this is hard work, that's because it's the toughest.
Oh, right.
I think there are just now just under 600 UK park runs or so. Bushy Park, the original, interestingly, if number one is the easiest and number 600 or whatever is the hardest, Bushy Park ranks at number 41. That's the original one that got it all going. Okay. My one, Richmond Park, ranks at 201. So basically, I just need to get off my bum a bit more, do a bit more training.
Just get faster, mate.
Yeah, indeed. So,
well, talking of fast park runs, Charlotte Arter at the weekend broke her park run record.
Yeah, she did.
So, you know, congratulations to her. It's another phenomenal time.
Yeah, what was it, 15
oh, I don't
something?
Know. No,
15, 41 or something.
It was just it was fast enough for me to go, that's mental. And then just not, but you know.
I watched a couple of interviews she did, like just on people's phones and stuff afterwards, and she was just typically kind of chirpy and like, oh yeah, it was great. You know, just that there was no ego and also no out of breathness. It's just like, how is this happening?
So fast. So yeah, a previous guest. So you know, feel free to dig through the archives and find our chat with Charlotte and actually with Andy Badley, who's the men's holder of the record. We spoke to both of them about running fast 5K. So there's a little episode for everyone to look into.
Yeah, if you can't actually do it, you might as well listen to people talking about it.
Exactly, exactly. Well, mate, thank you very much for the news.
No worries.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. A big thanks to our guest, Eddie Brocklesby, and to you, of course, for listening. The Runner's World podcast was recorded at Number 8 Studios in Soho and is available on Acast, iTunes, and all your favourite podcast apps. If you've enjoyed the episode, please give us a review and remember to tune in next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.